the Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, we talk about Sasquatch, we talk about UFOs, near-death experiences, conspiracies, ghosts, all sorts of fun stuff. I am Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Cherie DeSeuss.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
So we took a couple weeks off, you know, we had the holidays, Happy New Year, blah, blah, blah. Our guest today returns. I'm surprised he's back, especially after our controversial last episode with Mr. David Ellis of the Olympic Project.
Was it controversial?
No, I just kind of made that up to sound fun.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it's always good to add controversy.
How have you been?
I've been well. I've been staying at home doing the COVID thing, but that's okay because I get, as you know, but maybe I should inform your listeners that I do a lot of audio analysis from people, investigators from around the country, around the world, actually. They send me their audio of vocalizations or suspicious sounds that could be attributed to the Sasquatch phenomenon.
Now, you're one of the original folks that analyzed the, I'm not saying you were the first, because
no,
but you were one of the first people to use this spectral analysis kind of technique that's being used now to be able to identify visually these things.
I was mentored by a gentleman named Monongahela. That's his handle that he goes by in the BFRO community. He was interested in some of the sounds that I recorded, and we started to chat back and forth. And in 2010, he's the one that introduced me to spectrographic analysis. By trade, he's a cryptolinguist. So he's trained in the arts of understanding words and things of that nature that may be hard to understand. So he's got a trained ear, and he showed me how to look at things visually, because, you know, my ear is not trained, but visually, through this specific software of turning a recording into a visual spectrogram, you can identify things a lot easier. And so for someone like me, that became a godsend.
Me working in audio as a career for 25, 30 years now, I was always under the impression like, oh, I can just spot things in the WAV file. And I am so tuned into this. And then hearing some of the things that you've recorded yourself or people send in, especially like using a parabolic microphone and recording, I mean, you can't see it on a WAV file, but then the information you can see with the spectral view shows just this amazing world of identification.
Right. Yeah. Now you're introducing your eyes to study something, and you can see visually way more detail than you can hear. So you're able to spot crickets, the wind, brush moving. Everything has its own signature, including within our own species. You know, your voice is a little bit different than my voice, and you'd be able to spot that in a spectrogram, saying, oh, well, that's Johnny. That's his voice print. Right. Oh, well, that's David. That's his voice print.
Right.
Because you have these imprints of voices that the police and the FBI use, you're able to see and hear things over and over again from different parts of the world?
Yes. Now, just to be clear, the FBI and other analysts have software that takes it up even another notch or two. So the spectrogram is just one of many different ways of analyzing sound. But for an amateur as myself, it gives me a lot more credibility in being able to spot things and show them to other people.
Right. Have you seen a similarity between Bigfoot and human voices at all?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't ever claim that I've recorded a Sasquatch. It's degrees of suspiciousness for me. That's mm-hmm. really all we can claim. So I'm not part of the crowd that goes, oh, that's definitely a Bigfoot. Well, I'm saying there's probabilities of it being a Bigfoot, and some are greater probabilities than others. But there are dissimilarities, if you will, between the suspicious sounds that have my attention and a human voice.
I see. So you're using the scientific method.
Correct. The null hypothesis. We compare it. We assume everything has a known origin or is of or vocalized from a known animal. It is up to us to find out what animal that was that created that sound. So if I suspect that it sounds like a canine, I'm going to look in that particular group. Now, when I say I look into, I use the Macaulay Library of Sound as my go-to reference. They have thousands and thousands of animals documented by catalog, by number, witness vocalizing the sound that is on their audio. And they also provide now a spectrogram that goes with the audio so you can visually see what you're trying to compare to.
So you've been able to classify these anomalies so that when someone tries to, say, match it up with a bear or something else, they know that's not it.
Correct.
So your comparisons have a file of anomalies that you're not putting a tag on, but they're all coming in from these large hairy creatures.
Yeah, I can do it that way. I typically don't save files. I look at things. I know what the file is that I compared it to, but maybe I'm just a little bit on the lazy side.
Well, it seems like we have a lot to do.
Yeah. I've got quite a bit to do, and it's fun. It's way more fun than a guy like me can handle.
So how long have you been doing this, David?
Well, I was introduced to a spectrogram and spectrographic analysis, as I mentioned, from Monongahela, but that was in 2010. You know, I actually, how I got started was I was bemoaning to Monongahela that I'm listening to these audio recordings because I had hundreds of hours that I was reviewing, and I said, sometimes I fall asleep. He said, oh, you're doing this a little on the wrong side. Let me help you here. Have you heard of a spectrogram? And I said, no.
Yeah.
So he tutored me along and got me up to speed on how to look at things. And he and I have been ham and egging it ever since.
What is your position on individuals going out to the forest and trying to find Bigfoot and get into their space? What do you feel about that?
Lots of luck.
I see.
I could be categorized as one of those people because I have done that. Go out to the woods specifically, but I went specifically to places where witnesses have reported seeing something and work with the witness themselves. I was more into doing in-depth study than going from one witness to the next. Once I found a study area and a compliant witness, we delved into that location quite heavily, and I believe my results speak for themselves. So I'm happy to have been able to do it that way rather than chasing reports.
Do you have any reports that you could share with us without compromising people's identities or locations or anything?
You bet. If you want, like, the most recent one happened to be from a witness that has been letting me know of things that have been happening in his particular area. I've since the initial report that I took from him a couple of years ago. Just recently, there was one-sided crossing a fairly famous piece of road that you're familiar with, Johnny. It was interesting. They're still out there. So, you know, we get reports that trickle in now and then. There is another report that just came across my desk where a couple had got off trail and had an experience that was a visitation to their campsite.
Oh.
And quite detailed, and that was pretty interesting.
There have been reports sometimes that Sasquatch seems to know if the individuals that are camping are approachable or not, like a second sense. And sometimes they throw things.
Yes, they do. Well, it can be as innocuous as a little piece of wood. Or a fir cone or a pine cone.
Whoa, good shot. Ah! Finally, the first hit. It just hit my back and bounced off. Good shot. It's an honor and a privilege to be struck by something that was just in your hand.
Or as... maybe a little more sternly, a large rock. My speculation is if you're having rocks thrown at you, it's time to consider other options. In other words, you might want to leave.
When all of a sudden we heard big rocks landing in the water. And at first, I thought maybe it was a herd of elk or something along the bank. But no, they were single rocks, and they were big boulders. We could hear them hit the bottom of the river, even smacking against the rocks. They were huge rocks, because you could tell just from the sound of the splashing of the water and the smacking of the rock hitting the bottom of the river. We couldn't tell where it was coming from. It didn't sound like it was coming from very far away at all. You know, it seemed like it was just across the river. Yeah. But we could not see a thing. I didn't know what to think. I don't recall thinking of Sasquatch at that time, you know, but it was a very eerie feeling. It just made everybody uncomfortable. So we all got up and hit the trail to get out of there. And we were actually running down the trail when I seen something go by me and hit the guy in the back of his arm in front of me. And he yelled at the time and looked back at me and said, "What'd you do that for?" I said, "I didn't do that." And when we got up onto the road, he asked me again, "What did you hit me with?" I says, "You know, when we were running, I saw something go right by me and hit you in the back of the arm." I couldn't tell what it was because we were running and it was moving fast through the air. I just thought at the time that somebody or something was actually trying to make us fearful and let us know that somebody or something else was there. And gee, we just felt so uncomfortable and fearful, I guess. We took off. And the thing was, we got up on the road. You know, it was so clear. The moon was so big. We could see really well. But the thing was that I started smelling something.
It's obvious that there's something there that doesn't take kindly to your intrusion. And considers it, you go someplace else, this is where I am right now.
The accuracy that you hear some of these, whatever they are.
Extremely accurate. They can hit you if they want to.
Right.
And it seems that more often than not, they don't want to. But it could have been just a panic scenario creating all kinds of adrenaline in everybody.
Right.
That if they're on the run, let's get them out of here.
Right.
And
what seems to be the stigma about just flat out saying there is a creature living in high, elevated, wooded areas all over our planet that don't particularly want to be around us, and will throw things for you to stay away. Why can't we put a label on that? What's the stigma?
Well, I believe it's called science. Scientists have reputations and political scenarios that they want to protect. So that is the stigma. Science will not accept, will not investigate. And to the bane of credible scientists and biologists as Dr. John Bindernagel, he was befuddled by that, wrote several books addressing that.
Hello, John Bindernagel here. I just wanted to provide a short introduction to a video presentation at the Sasquatch Summit here in the fall of 2016, if Johnny Manson accepts it for presentation. By way of background, I just need to explain that I can't be there in person as I had hoped because of a cancer diagnosis, which I got last summer. But at that time, I found that in some ways, and in a positive way, I basically was told that I don't have as much time to just proceed with this almost leisurely unfolding of the Sasquatch discovery, or at least my participation in this kind of gradual unfolding, but that I should maybe start summing up some of the results of my research and some of the issues that seem to be inhibiting progress, or at least prolonging the discovery process. Now, I don't want to go on too much, but what I've done here is I addressed something that came up this past summer, which I thought was quite helpful, and you'll see that as the video unfolds. So this is my sort of take on public perception of the Sasquatch as tabloid material, as pseudoscience, as myth in a very narrow sense, and how we have been misinterpreting really important scientific discovery for decades, longer actually, more than a century. But anyway, I hope my perspective is helpful. That remains to be seen. Unfortunately, I depend a lot on the quotes of other scientists who have actually affirmed our participation in this discovery process, even though most people don't always see it in that light. So before I go on too much, I just want to say thank you very much. Thank you, Johnny Manson, for the opportunities to come together and share the evidence contributing to the discovery, which unfortunately continues to be, what's the word? Not yet mainstream science. Thank you very much.
He's of the opinion and wrote good research papers to, you know, to prove his position that there is a creature out there. But as you suggested, the stigma is just too much for people to really delve into it the way science needs to. But that's what the Olympic Project is hoping to do, is keep our information at a level that science could take a look at it and make a determination.
Have they approached you for information, or?
I believe that there is a younger crowd that's coming up that has shown interest. Obviously, they need to be protected, so we'll keep that under our hats, so to speak. But I believe, yeah, as time marches on and this becomes a little bit more in the purview of people. You know, if you were to take a poll of 1,000 people, only 300 people would say they've even heard of Bigfoot. So it still isn't on the radar.
Interesting.
Yet.
And what about the nests? Now, you've been on the show, and Derek has been, and Tom and Shane numerous times, and we've talked about the nests. I don't know if Cherie has heard about these nests. Could you give us a little recap about what that's all about?
I forget the year, but it was either 2015 or 2016. We had an expedition at the Olympic Project, and Derek got a phone call from a person that owned some timber, private timber company a fairly large piece of timber. He was a little bit miffed because one of his timber cruisers came back and said to him that he found something that he had never, ever seen in all his years of marking timber. And it kind of spooked him because it looked, there was a series of, he found, I believe it was five or six, what he described as nests. And that's exactly what they were. They looked like a bird's nest, you know, only huge. They're very large. Actually, one was really large, and then there was a series of other smaller ones. But they, like I said, they look like a bird's nest, and they were made from huckleberry bushes. This whole area that they were in, it was maybe 7 to 10 acres of nothing but just huckleberries and large trees. There was enough light filtering through, I guess, to make this a great place for growing huckleberries. But anyway, something had come through there and destroyed about 2 acres of huckleberry branches to make these nests. And it was that was the other part that spooked him, because this was not the work of a bear. A bear will usually take just you know, local scrapings and literally take some bark off of a tree to utilize and then kind of paw around and then something to lay on. This was actually constructed. We later had Dr. Meldrum come through, and he pointed out that there were vertical sticks jammed into the ground that were used as a frame, if you will, so that they could bend the branches around it. So if you, on that aspect alone, that takes an opposable thumb. So there's two suspects, human and not human.
Yeah.
The other. So we had bear biologists look at these. We had several bear biologists take a peek and said, nope, that's not bear. We don't know what it is, but we do know it ain't bear.
Do you think this could have been a way for Sasquatch, for their females, to bear children?
That's exactly where I went with this, because the nests were a phenomenon that we were not familiar with. Nests, single nests, had been reported, but they were just things that had been laid on the ground, not necessarily a formed circle, if you will, constructed. Most nests appear to have things dragged to a location and then, you know, something lays on it. That's the kind of thing that I had been familiar with when somebody says they found a nest. This was completely out of the ordinary, never seen construction like this before. Derek was so miffed that he spent a couple of days on the internet, and he finally found a match. And it was the lowland gorillas in Africa.
Many people believe, I've been doing a lot of reading since I moved to Washington, that Sasquatch is a primate. And it would stand to reason that because they're not so technologically advanced, that they would cling to what works. And what would work is creating a safe environment for their wives to bear their children.
We're going to talk more about the nests, Littlefoot, and some suspicious audio with David Ellis of the Olympic Project, coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. And our guest from the Olympic Project, David Ellis, a regular here on the show. We've been going over the nests that were discovered up in the Olympics. What else can you tell us about them?
Well, we can tell you that there was definite strategy in the placement of the nests. and their location. One of our members worked in the military, and we were listening to Derek and Shane kind of give the Olympic Project an update on what they had found. And Derek put on the screen a location map showing the ridge that it was located on and a river down below. This gentleman and I looked at each other and went, that's a military operation. They had set up a perimeter. They had the alpha, which was, we suspected the alpha because it was a huge nest. It was 8 feet in length. There was a couple of scored rocks that were by the nest. We have the rocks. We have took pictures of it, but those rocks had been scored for a reason. It was an alert system. Where these nests were located, you could not come down from the ridgeline without being heard. It was just too much of a distance. So, and then there was a river that was down below that would be usually is filled with salmon at certain times of the year. And it was behind a locked gate. And from my experience, there seems to be a knowledge of what a gate does. There was, you know, just a lack of people in the area. This particular spot would be absolutely perfect to hide a group and, as you said, maybe go through a birthing process.
Did they get destroyed, or are they still there?
This was a temporary scenario.
You guys just left it all alone?
Yes. Derek put in a couple of cameras, not in the area, but near the area, and then we left it alone for like 6 months.
What's the answer here? I mean, they don't want us to come and mess with them, which is totally understandable. They do reach out on occasion.
Their curiosity seems to be the Achilles heel. So anything that you can do to appeal to that curiosity is what you want to try to do.
There are young ones, right?
Johnny, do you have a copy of Littlefoot in your office to show Cherie?
Yeah, I may have shown her already, but...
Due to their size, I would think that gestation for females would be of a longer term than, say, human, maybe as much as 12 months.
You know, that's a good theory. I would probably back that theory that, well, Sasquatch are Sasquatch and humans are humans. And I think that we tend to ascribe humanness to them when we really need to learn Sasquatch, if that makes any sense at all.
Aren't they also primate?
I think they are. I think they're a relic hominid.
Oh, okay.
Here it is. There's Littlefoot.
Oh, please. That's a tiny little cast.
And for our listener, I'll post pictures and maybe a video on strangeharbor.net so you can check out Littlefoot.
Look at the heel.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine birthing that?
No. This
In a word.
Oh.
Hey, can you explain to her the circumstances around those casts?
There was a location in eastern Washington near Mount Rainier that yielded human-like footprints, but they still had my attention because there were certain oddities about them. Back in 2006, I went to this lake every weekend until they closed the area down in November. So I started about the middle of September. So this was after Labor Day. And what I noted was that as the lake level dropped, the impressions would go, still follow the lake line, which means that people or something else were walking barefoot along the lake reservoir. When I was there, I never ever saw anybody without shoes on. Doesn't mean that nobody did take off their shoes and walk around. I just never saw it. Yeah, there were people there. It was a public place. There were several large impressions that I did cast that were suspiciously long. There was 1 foot that went from 11 inches to 15 and a half inches over a two-year period. It was the same foot. I was tracking the same individual. So that's another thing that kind of had my interest. even though people would look at it and say, well, that's a long human foot. Well, here's the circumstances, here's the context. It makes it still a little strange. Anyway, I learned a ton about casting. My wife decided in 2010 to go with me and look at what I was doing. I finally piqued her interest. She was walking around and she found some small childlike impressions, and I came over and looked at them and I said, well, that does look human, but you know what? I'll cast those later today for you. And because these are the first impressions that you found. We went looking around the lake and spent another 4 or 5 hours finding and casting other impressions. And we headed back to the car, and almost got to the car when I realized, oh, I hadn't cast those impressions I told you I would. So I said, give me 20 minutes. I'll be right back. Usually what I do is I document what I find, take pictures with scale and from numerous angles before I cast so that you can compare the pictures to the cast. So I didn't do any of that. I knew they were human, and I just wanted to cast those four. So I did. And I was all done, and I had a little bit of casting material left. And I went to kind of dispatch it so that I could clean my tub that I had mixed the hydrocal in. And lo and behold, there was right near my ankle, or not ankle, my knee, where I was kneeling, was a very small impression. And I looked at it and went, oh my God, that's a foot. And so rather than just throw the casting material away, I smooshed it into the little impression. And what you saw right there is what it yielded.
Yeah, the spreading of the large toe from the rest of the toes and the broadness. I mean, it all just screams weight. And
Yeah. Okay, so I have a scenario for you.
Okay.
The little impressions that I cast for my wife, the left foot was in front of the right foot, and the little foot was... it was a little bit further away, but not much, from the left foot and the right foot. So if you were to draw a 90-degree angle, it would be at the center point. So I think that something was holding, and it got a single foot down, because I looked for other impressions and did not find any. It was only that impression. And if you think about it, this creature at this age may not be walking, but it may have wriggled free and got a foot down.
It could have even been riding her foot.
Yeah.
And attached to the hair on her leg. I mean, if you look at primates, kids squirrel around all over their parents.
Exactly.
And if you want to see the little foot we're talking about, it's a cast that David had made along with a track line. And we'll post a picture and maybe some video of it on strangeharbor.net. And you could see just how small this track is. I think he may even have some for sale. But anyway, so besides this being a really small track, I mean, how can we determine that it's not a human track? I mean, what's so special about it?
The interesting thing, if you count the number of digits on that foot, there's only four. Now, one could theorize that maybe the digit next to the big toe didn't imprint. Maybe it was raised up. But one of the impressions that I did cast for my wife only had four toes. And I know it only had four toes because it had jammed its foot deep enough into the soil that I cast the top of the foot. So I got part of the top of the foot and the bottom of the foot and four toes.
This could be something that was passed down through DNA, and you can see the roundedness of the little toe, how wide and broad it is, and the way it swings up to touch the other two toes.
Now, the little toe has a piece that's broken off, so it's actually wider than what it looks.
Okay.
You see the little chip there?
Yeah, I do.
What's also interesting is if you hold the foot up to your eyes, you can see where the foot bends in the middle fairly significantly.
It does bend in the middle. The arch is very high.
Actually, the foot is grasping, if you will.
Okay.
Now, there is a scar feature near the heel that runs to the ball of the foot. That was a stick it stepped on, and that's fatty tissue that conformed around that stick. And I'm not sure an infant would have as much fatty material to the stick literally came up with the casting. That's
well,
how
is...
much fatty tissue conformed around the stick. Also, there it's hard to see in the reproduction there. In the original cast, there are really good dermal swirls. So whatever this is, human or otherwise, it's definitely a biological creature because you can see the dermal ridges. That keel, to me, suggests something that has a much larger bone structure than we do.
Oh, this is a huge heel.
It's almost half the foot.
Cacus, yeah. It makes sense because this foot's going to have to grow to hold 500 pounds.
Or more.
If you multiply all the dimensions of that foot, width, length, heel size, ball of the foot, it works out to be something around the size of Patty's foot.
And what always amazed me about that whole Patterson-Gimlin thing and all the people that said it was them in the suit.
Right.
Before it was stabilized with the way technology is now, they didn't mention anything about breasts, about making breasts or having breasts. Before we stabilized it and saw, oh, there's boobs there.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. They didn't say, oh, yeah, we use shoulder pads. That's how my shoulders are so big and I had no neck in that suit that I wore is because I used shoulder pads. Well, what about the boobs? You didn't mention that 20 years ago.
It was an easy joke to perpetrate on a neighbor because, you know, they were neighbors, Bob
yeah.
Gimlin and Bob Hieronymus. There's lots of theories that Roger Patterson may have actually tried to film something as a promo, a teaser prior to them going. And so it does get a kind of murky, kind of muddy. But the bottom line is, it does, all of that doesn't matter. None of it matters because of Bill Munn's work and Dr. Meldrum's work. That's a living creature in that movie.
So what work did they do that...
Bill Munn's?
Right.
He is a costume maker I should say he's a highly credentialed costume maker.
Wasn't he with Disney at one point?
You know, I don't know. His probably most famous costume is the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Mm. Oh, okay. My gosh. That was a good one.
Yeah, so he knows from designing costumes. He thought, piece of cake, all in this controversy. He's of the mind. He has the detail, obviously, that can pick things apart. And he went tooth and nail at it. And the more he got into it, the further he got away from being able to prove that it was somebody in a costume. I mean, just from the dimensions of the creature that don't match human dimensions. You
right.
can't make your arms longer from your shoulder to your elbow.
Right.
No.
You know?
believe me.
You can't match your knees to your feet with the creature. I mean, every bit of that creature has different than human dimensions. So you can't put a human in a suit and match the dimensions. You can't put a human head, and Bill proved this, in a head costume and make the eyes, you'd have to be looking out the nose. That's just an infinitesimal small part of what he discovered and actually taking a scientific look at it.
Wow. So what is your next move at the Olympic Project? What are you guys getting into?
A year ago, Shane, Todd Hale, and some other folks from the Olympic Project discovered a nest building process. The nest had not been completed, but it was obvious that a nest was going to be built. And Shane was positive of the day that he interrupted that process as he heard something huge moving around them. So the more they got into investigating, they found footprints, they found handprints, and started doing recordings in the area, and we've got several very suspicious sounds. We've got an area that we're going to continue to work, and see what that yields. Like I said, we got people coming to us all the time.
Do you see a future that Bigfoot would have like a reservation where people weren't allowed to go in to protect them and the way that they live?
Well, that's kind of down the road. Who knows what's going to happen the day discovery becomes a reality. We have lots of history of how it can go with all kinds of regulation. I just don't know how to answer that question. I guess it's a wait and see. I'm of the opinion, and hopefully we can demonstrate that our practices as we are now, we don't have to change a thing. We don't have to spend money on nothing. These creatures are extremely self-reliant. I mean, they've gone all this time without being discovered, so they have adapted. Don't mess with it. You start, you know, locking everything down, you could actually literally hurt their habitat because they've adapted to how we are living.
With all the satellites that are being put up, I mean, they're talking about 100,000. With that going on from all these different countries trying to put satellites up and on the moon and reaching Mars, etc., it's only a matter of time before, you know, these heat signatures are just constantly coming up in the rural mountain areas. I don't see how they could hide from that.
Yeah, I don't know if the government is going to feel a need to share any of that. So,
well, not our government.
Right.
But there are other governments who have become
That's true.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We know they are out there. It's not a belief system for me. I know.
Hey, you know, you sent me some audio. Can we play some of this audio you sent?
Which ones?
I don't know. Whichever ones that you want me to play. I have...
Four fishermen are on the Ho River, far upstream, drifting and, you know, catching fish, when all of a sudden they hear that vocalization. And I say that vocalization, that was a recreation, because they had claimed they heard a vocal, reported it to the Olympic Project. I sent some vocalizations, then replied, well, can anybody imitate what they had heard? And one gentleman said, yeah, I teach music. Oh, yeah, I've heard that before. The Michigan Project. So if you want to play that cut now.
So an untrained ear could say, oh, well, that's just a coyote. But using the spectral analysis process, the visual fingerprint of that sound does not match that of a coyote.
Do you think that Bigfoot, Sasquatch will sound familiar from one area to another and maybe share some of the same words?
Evidence has yielded that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I've got about 25 to 30 different sounds that I've recorded here that are being recorded elsewhere.
There are those who suppose that Sasquatch has the ability to use their minds to contact one another.
Telepathy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have an issue with people speculating on that. As far as the Olympic Project goes, we're looking for specific things, you know, just not in that category. Ron Moorhead, who is a part of the theory that there's quantum physics involved with these creatures, he's part of the Olympic Project. He has some notions, and we don't disrespect anybody's theories or opinions. We just follow what we can do and get things in a methodology that science can pick up if they want.
Yeah, I'm a big one on quantum theory, and would love to, you know, suppose that this is a possibility. You know, when you see a photon that is entangled.
Yeah.
I mean...
Right. Yeah, that's a reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know how far you go from there. And again, for us, we're looking for specific things because that's what for us as a group seems to be the right methodology for where we want to go as a group of like-minded researchers. Again, we don't pour water or say anything negative about other folks. There's just nothing, you know, that's all politics when you get down that road.
Yeah. Well, it's not science. If you're, you know, picking on the guy who's talking about quantum theory, it's not science anymore.
The evidence we have, we've vetted to a certain point. Now, if the science does take an interest, they can take it from there and, you know, weed out the chaff from that. So we understand our place. We are not trained, but we try to adapt as much information that can be gleaned by people that are trained, that can dig deeper with the evidence as we have collected it.
Hey, man, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. You know.
Well, this was a fun one. I think we covered a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I think our listeners enjoy getting tidbits from the people who are doing all this hard work. You really did a great job of enlightening people who may not know that much about Bigfoot, even though they live in the Pacific Northwest.
Trying to keep it as real as we can.
You'll be back, of course, on the show.
I hope so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
It was great to meet you, Cherie.
Thank you so much, David.
I'm trying to get him back down here to do some camping.
Yes.
Really?
But he says the weather has to get better or something.
It's foggy out there right now.
I would think the Bigfoots would be used to it.
I'm not.
Let's take Cherie out with us. Do some
Absolutely.
Observations.
If she wants to go camping, more than welcome.
That would be groovy.
Groovy.
Yeah, until you hear the first wood knock.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, a Sasquatch primate would scare me out
I'll
of
tell
the
you,
woods.
The spookiest situation I was ever in was I was sitting in a rock pit with a gentleman in an area that we had worked. I had my bionic dish pointed in the direction of the forest. All of a sudden, there's this huge commotion in the woods. It sounded like a D9 cat had been started up and was just mowing trees down. And then all of a sudden, you can hear this whack, 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 and then a squeal of a raccoon. Whack, whack, squeal, squeal, whack, whack. It was pretty obvious what was going on.
Yeah.
And my heart was in my throat at that moment. I do have the whole thing recorded, but the dish was pointed in the opposite direction, so it didn't get the full emphasis of what was going on, but it did enough. You can hear what was going on. The good news is, as we were walking out, we saw the raccoons scurry away. So.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to know more about the Olympic Project, we got to give away our Strange Harbor dog tag.
That's right. So how are we going to give this away?
How about you go to our website, strangeharbor.net, click contact, and just send us in your name and you know, your email so we can contact you back.
Well, let's make it a little tougher.
Okay.
Tell us what you like about Strange Harbor.
Good one. Yeah, just log on to strangeharbor.net, click contact, and send that in. And of all our entries, we'll just randomly pick one. How's that?
I think that's great.
Or should we pick the best one?
Yeah, it might turn out to be going to the good one. But yeah, we do. We have something to give away this week. And we'll let you know next week who won.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.